Welcome to Le Rendez-vous. My name is Garance Doré and I'm a writer with so many stories to tell and ideas to share that I created this special moment to talk about all the things that are going on in our lives. So come, let's spend a moment together. Le Rendez-vous is brought to you by Doré, the skincare line I co-created, wanting to bring more simplicity and efficacy to our lives. Check out the end of the episode for a special code just for you, the Rendez-vous listeners. Do you sometimes have these conversations that feel uncomfortable? It's almost like you leave them and you feel a bit bad about yourself, whether it's happened online or in a real life. You leave them with a weird taste in your mouth. You're a little bit uneasy and you can't really put your finger on it. So what is that all about? It took me a long time to understand that often when I'm left with that feeling, it's because I've just been confronted to something that I would call discourse. It's when the things that people say don't really correspond to their reality or to what you can see as obvious. It is that question also of what people say versus what they do. I thought that today I would take you through a few examples of what I call discourse, so that we could explore that subject that took me a very long time to understand. The first one is an easy one because I think we've all experienced it. And it's all the talk about love. We've all met a guy and felt very attracted and started seeing them and having them say so many things to us, that we're beautiful, that we're unique or special, that they have feelings for us, that we're important, all these things. Some of them even will go as far as telling you that they love you, that you're changing their life. All these things that sound so delicious to our ears and that we carry in our lives for hours after they've been told to us, whether it is through a text or a phone call or just real words. I remember I had this friend who I was hoping to date and he kept telling me how much of a cool woman I was and how beautiful I was and how anybody who'd be with me would be lucky. And I couldn't really understand what was going on there because his actions didn't show any of that. And I think we've all been through that. They never have time to see you. They don't call back. They'll only text when they're bored. I mean, I can assume they're bored because it's very sporadic. They will see you at the last minute, text you in the middle of the night. And in our head, we're going to be trying to reconciliate what they're saying and what they're doing. And we have a choice. Do I believe what they're telling me? In which case, that's true. They may be too busy to see me. They have a lot going on. Or maybe for some of them, they're still going through some stuff. Maybe they just came out of a breakup and they need time for themselves. And they have all the reasons in the world to not really be there. But if we only looked at the reality of the relationship, it would be very easy to see what this person is telling us with their actions, right? They don't have time for us. They don't make time for us. They don't really respect our time because they're calling us at the last minute, which means that they don't really respect us. And all the love and affection they're talking about is either to reassure us or reassure themselves. And what we are put in front of is just bullshit. It's just discourse. It's not true. Of course, many of us choose to believe the words instead of the actions. But usually, it ends up in a disaster. And I'm sure all of us have gone through that, been disappointed, and understood at some point, oh, I just chose to not look at the actions and I'll be smarter next time. And then we make the mistake again because discourse is incredibly enticing and words are how we've been taught to interact with the world. And so that's what we do. That's what we choose to do, on and on and on. There is also around love all this culture of showing off our love, showing off our couple. There are Valentine's Day. There's all these narratives about weddings and how there's such an achievement in life. And there is all this vocabulary that comes with love, whether it's talk about the twin flame, is he the one? All this language that has been created to help us define what we're living when we're in a relationship with someone. And sometimes those cliches are what we're going to run to when we don't really know what we're feeling. All this vocabulary of love that we can sometimes borrow without really knowing what we're talking about, it makes it very easy to hide emptiness behind all these cliches that have been created for us. That's also manifesting on social media a lot. People who really make a point of displaying their couples on Instagram, people who present themselves as this perfection of love, and they travel together and they cook together and they adopt this dog. And I've been there. I think I've kind of done that. And of course, it was hiding a relationship where I was very insecure, where I was not happy, and where I felt like the word love probably wasn't really adapted to what I was living, but that I really had tried to enter that cliche and that world of perfect love that I really wanted to be a part of. Problem with these cliches and all these words and all of these kind of mystique we create around our couples without being really sure of what we're truly living on the inside, is that they can kind of move the attention from cultivating something real with the person to worshiping the shell itself. Those ideas that we've created around us, that, oh, we're the hot couple, or, oh, we're the adventurous, cool couple. That's what we do. That's who we are. Look at us. And often it takes so much space and it becomes quite caricatural because it's not attached to something that's real, that it can actually slowly eat up the couple that's inside. And that's why I think it's very important to be able to listen to the words we say and try to see if they have actual meaning for us, how they resonate. Are they real, or are we just trying to convince ourselves that this is the real deal? Are we just trying to fit in? Are we just trying to build something out of thin air? And maybe actually this is not the right person. And that's an easy example because we've all seen it. And we all know about that type of discourse. But one that I think is a little more pernicious is the following. Okay. Have you ever heard a parent, a man or a woman, complain and say that they can't see their children enough? That their life is incredibly difficult because they have those children that they adore and that they worship and that's the most important thing in their life, right? This is always what we hear about kids. It's this glorification of the sentiment from parents to their children. Something that today I think we're a bit even forced to say, right? What's the most important in your life? Oh, my children, of course, they're the most important thing. Okay, I love that. And I think, in a way, that's how it should be, right? But the truth is that it puts people in such difficult places because you can adore your children and want the best for them and want to raise them the best you can. But I know a lot of people who truly, in their actions, put work first. And I completely understand. I don't have children, and it's a question that I've explored so many times. It's a difficult subject because, of course, it's a big taboo. But the truth is, I was talking with a friend the other day who has kids and who barely sees them because he's traveling and working all the time. And we were having a drink, and he was sitting there, and he was telling me, oh, I'm doing all of it for them. It's all for them. That way I can provide for them, I can give them the best life, and I have to do what I'm doing. I can't be home, and I miss them so much, and it's so hard because they're the most important thing in my life. And this has been going in their life since they were born. And I think it's fine. I think they'll grow up to be great kids. And he was asking me to commiserate with him, and I did. Because I didn't want to tell him the truth of what I think. You can't always say exactly what you think, right? You have to preserve people's emotions sometimes. But what I truly thought inside of me was that this was not true. You do have a choice. He could choose to have a job that keeps him home. He might make less money, have less power, have a much less exciting life, but then he would be close to his kids and he would actually live in that reality that he's telling me about, the reality where his children are the number one thing for him, where they count more than anything else, where they count more than money, than power, than personal achievement. But I just think it's not that true. I actually don't think he's doing all of that for the children. I really hope he's not making them feeling guilty about it. Because the children don't really care how much money he makes and what car he drives. He's doing most of it for himself. And that's okay. And that's the life choice that he's obviously making, even though he doesn't want to admit it to himself. And in that case, looking at his actions, show me how it is. It's not always the case. Some parents actually have to travel for one reason or another. But I think that we've been taught that it's okay to say one thing and be entirely convinced of it and act in an entirely different way. My point of view on that, and that's why I would never tell him what I truly think, is that discourse is actually something that helps us keep ourselves together. And that it's almost like a crutch, it's almost like a wall that you can lean on that helps you give a narrative to your life and absolve you from things that maybe you're not so proud of. And it is not my role or anyone's role to go and put reality in the face of people that don't really want to hear it. I mean, unless you're one of the victims of the discourse. I've told what I thought to my parents a few times because I was impacted by their choices. And I was outraged by what they were telling me to justify them. You can see that discourse is sometimes something that is so helpful. And that's why one thing that's very important is to know that it exists, but to not discard it and to let people use it when they need it. I was talking to a friend recently who is the definition of an exhausted mother. She's very much alone, full on exhaustion, messy house, problems at work because of the children, so many things that go all hand in hand together and that a lot of parents have to go through at some point in their life. there is this moment when you have very young kids where life is upside down and it's really difficult. And in those moments, discourse really helps you. So my friend, instead of telling me, I'm exhausted, I'm desperate, I don't know what I'm doing, I have a toddler attached to my hip, I don't have time for myself, all those things that I can obviously see. Instead, she tells me, I adore my life. I couldn't be happier. Life is all about children, isn't it? My husband is perfect. Such a good father. Life is not about me anymore. It's about them. In other words, as Graham, my husband, would say,
the lady doth protest too much, methinks.
Which is from a Shakespeare play and points that sometimes so much insistence might be indicating a little bit of insecurity. But I think this way of speaking is truly helpful when we're going through moments that are difficult. Sometimes our words hold us together. And at some point, like a lot of mothers I've seen, she will get back up on her feet and she'll remember these moments. Like, wow, what happened? I really went through something and came back from it. And she'll probably be talking with more subtlety about what's going on in her life. I also found that in a different setting, something much less intimate, with companies that tell you, we are family. I remember when I had a bigger team and I was talking with other CEOs and presidents of companies, and they were like, oh, my team and I were like a family. I remember a friend telling me, oh, I've never fired anyone because everybody has a quality. You just have to reorient them to another part of the company. And I love everyone in my company. Everybody's so special. This kind of thing always made me uncomfortable. And that's always the thing. If I feel uncomfortable, if I feel like something's a bit off, if a conversation makes me feel uneasy, it's usually because something like that is happening in the background, something, a bit of a discourse, a bit of a lie, a bit of a deception. And I'm not saying the person is trying to deceive me. I think they're just deceiving themselves, and that I'm feeling it, and it's weird because I've never wanted my company to be like a family. I come from a dysfunctional family, like most people I know. And relationships are weird. And I actually want to go to, and I mean, you know, today I work on my own, but if I had a company again, if I was to build something, I'd be very clear. This is not a family. This is a place where you come to work. I don't want it to be over invested emotionally. We can have cordial, respectful relationships, but here is where you're going to find things that are very simple. There is a time and a place for family, and a time and a place for work and work relationships. My colleagues and my employees were never my best friends. It doesn't mean that we can't go on a retreat together and have fun for a week and exchange ideas and grow together. It doesn't mean that one of them that I specifically share something with cannot become a friend. But it means that there are very clear codes and rules and setups, and that this is work and nothing is personal. And that's the best thing about it. An employee will decide to move on and change companies, and you won't be mad at them because we're not like family. It's not personal. It's professional. Totally understand if you want to go try something else. And that's why I think it's important to examine the things that we say. Because I do believe in the power of words, and talking about a workplace as a family can sometimes become a little bit abusive because you can ask more from a member of a family, for example, right? Other things that make bells ring in my mind are couples who say they are best friends. This is something that I see now everywhere. It's part of the discourse that we hear so much, normal speech. When you love someone, when you're very happy with your husband or wife or boyfriend, say, oh, he's my best friend, or she's my best friend. I actually don't hate this one because in some way, often I feel like Graham is one of my best friends. But then I try to catch myself and be like, no, he's your husband. It's a different type of relationship. Of course, you should enjoy spending time with him the same way you do with the best friend. But it's something really different. And often I'm worried that the best friend narrative is hiding things. Like we get along, but we don't have sex or whatever. No, my husband is my husband. It's a very special relationship that I don't have with anyone else. He's not my best friend. He's somebody that I share something that's emotional, physical, that's very privileged and special. And I love that. And I don't want him to be my best friend, actually. Best friends are not people I want to live with or have sex with. The best friend one, I still think can be very cute, and I understand it. I try not to say it, but I get it. But one that really drives me crazy is when people say, I'm only doing it to help others. So, you know, we live in this influencer world now. There is millions of people on TikTok giving advice, new type of gurus, people who launch beauty brands like me, all of these things like charities. And they'll tell you, oh, I'm only doing this to help others. And it's so not true. It's such discourse. 99% of the time, the person is doing that to help themselves. They want to make money. They want to get publicity. They want to make themselves feel good in one way or another. And that's completely fine. Let's say if they're a guru, they can be passionate about self-help. Maybe that's something that's very important to them. But it's not true to say that you're doing it just for others. Nobody does things just for others. The number one person that you're serving is yourself. And I think it's fine to say, I love doing my podcast and I love writing my newsletters. And I love when I get good feedback and people write to me and tell me, oh, you've changed my life. And this newsletter really helped me see something that I wasn't seeing and it made me laugh and all these things. And I love that. I love helping others and I love connecting with others. But the first person I love is me. I love writing. I love recognition. I love being seen. I often say I am a little bit narcissistic, like 99% of people today who are out there putting themselves on social media. It's just become part of our culture. So I would really love if people could be a little bit more honest with that. Because it's so obvious and, again, makes us a little bit uneasy when we're like, well, all these people are really driven by such big hearts and they're so selfless. You listen to them on interviews and you're like, wow, that's incredible. All these charities and I'm not doing that. They leave you kind of wondering about yourself and you'd think you're not such a good person. But I think it's fine to know that the number one person you're doing things for is yourself. It's perfectly okay. And that putting things back in order in our minds and being able to tell ourselves, yes, the number one person that I think about is myself. And then there is circles of what I care about. And helping others may become second or third. I don't know. But I'm not this selfless saint that I'm pretending to be. So when I'm put in front of these things now, I'm getting a little bit better at hearing them for what it is, which is discourse, which is something that should be taken with a grain of salt, whether it's the father telling me he can't do otherwise and it's really hard, but he has to travel around the world in all these first class flights and beautiful hotels, but that really deeply inside of himself, he would be at home with these kids, whether it's people telling me that they launched these baby brands because they love babies and they needed to change the world of baby clothes. I don't know, these kind of things. I'm like, mm-hmm. Or whether it's the exhausted mother that will tell me that having children is the only important thing in their lives. I know that because I don't have children and I have the other side of that discourse. And it's interesting to hear women that either couldn't have kids or didn't want children, and in any case didn't have them, struggle with their image in society, because we do. It's not easy, but the same way everybody does. And that's the reason why we hold on to discourse so much. And it's really funny to hear these women say, oh, having children is terrible. You don't have time for yourself. Couples who don't have children are happier. This was the right choice. And there is on social media, because, you know, we're at a time when all these kind of discourses have people who embody them and they make it the subject of their life not to be a mother. I'm child free. This is my choice. It's the best thing you can do. The world doesn't need more children. All these kind of things. I'm like, you tried and it didn't work, or it's just something that's not your choice. But it's not the best choice. I'm not reinventing history because I didn't have children. It was something that was painful in my life. And then I accepted it. And now I'm enjoying my life the way it is. But I'm not saying that there is not another door that could have opened where I would have had kids and I would have been incredibly happy too. And that's the problem with discourse, is when it becomes such a shell that we hang our identity to. And that's when it can become very detrimental, not just because it will make others feel uncomfortable when they're talking with us, but because it will start defining our whole lives and sometimes become a prison that we create for ourselves. And that's why I believe in being a bit more soft with our words and not identifying ourselves with all our decisions and not having to proclaim that every choice that we made was the right one. No, sometimes we make mistakes. Sometimes a relationship wasn't what we thought it would be. Sometimes we're with someone and we don't exactly know what we're feeling. And I think it's important to not let ourselves be imprisoned by all those cliches and all this discourse. Because what if you made your whole personality about not having children and then suddenly you want one? What if you've made your whole life about being this perfect couple and then you feel like you have to stay in it even if you're miserable just because you've attached all your life to it? So in the future, if anything makes you feel uncomfortable, if a conversation triggers you in weird places, like the day my friend told me that all that mattered in life was her children, because that's the most important thing that a woman can do, and I don't have them, and trust me, this conversation made me more than a little bit uncomfortable. I think I was crying right after. Even though I love my life, even though I love how things turned out for me. Anytime a conversation makes you feel a little bit uneasy, a little bit uncomfortable, maybe triggers you in strange places, before you start exploring yourselves and telling yourself you've made the wrong choices in your life, that you've missed out on something, telling yourself that you shouldn't be single or you should be a mother or it's a career that you should have chosen, which I used to do so much. Anytime anyone would promote their lifestyle to me, I'd think, oh, I'm doing it all wrong. And I'd question my entire life. Well, now I realize that people who are truly happy don't keep going on about it. They have a sort of quiet glow. And often they're aware that their life could have gone 100 other directions. But that's the one they chose. And it has some good sides and some bad sides. And they embrace it all. Just because that friend is here telling you that they're so happy with their choice that any other choice is the wrong one. All these things that your intellect hears and wants to believe, but that your intuition reacts to, just remember to question the narrative. Just remember to actually take a look and examine these people's lives, what their actions are actually saying about them. And it's not a matter of being mad at them. Remember that often discourse protects us and helps us, and that it's not directed at you, but that it can be the wall that helps that person not crumble. And if you're in a moment in your life when you're doing that yourself, explore it, but keep compassion towards yourself and see what you're doing and see how you could tweak things and soften your discourse and be like, I don't know if he's the one. I'm feeling strange things about him. Let's look at his actions. Let's look at my actions. What is my life saying about me that my words aren't? What excuses am I finding for myself? What narrative am I opposing to that story? All these pitfalls that sometimes can prevent us from seeing the truth and maybe tweaking the truth to actually find simple happiness, true love, a balanced life where our choices are just ours and no one else's. And it's completely fine, even if they're not maybe easy to understand from the outside. You don't have anything to prove. You don't have anything to prove because this is your life. Have a wonderful week. I'm sending you love. Le Rendez-Vous is brought to you by Doré. Doré's latest launch, La Micellaire, is a botanical micellar cleansing water that doesn't require rinsing. Minimize bathroom time and maximize outdoor time with our super simple routine. Use code PODCAST10 for 10% off your first order. Thank you for listening to Le Rendez-Vous. If you want to know more about me, find out about my newsletter and my community, find me on Instagram at Garance Doré or at my website at garance.world. And well, if you'd like to find out how to spell that crazy name, just check out the show notes. Until next time, sending you love.